Lonnie Fisher, Fisher, Lonnie, that's a really easy name to pronounce. I can't believe I made it so difficult. Lonnie Fisher and the Funeral have joined us this morning with a copy of their new CD called The Story of Ramona. And it sounds awesome. I'm sure you guys are excited about it. You did it at Black Lodge, and it sounds really good. And yeah, why don't you guys introduce yourselves so we can get familiar with your voices.
Chris Nunez, percussions.
Progressions.
Charles McVeigh, and I play keyboards.
And I am Lonnie Fisher, vocalist, and Steve Bagwell, who isn't present today, is our bass player.
Cool. So I saw you guys at the Record Bar a couple nights ago, and you had a pretty killer show that I totally missed, but but I have seen you recently, and it sounded really good.
Thanks.
I guess seems like, Lonnie, you kind of pulled this band together not so long ago, the current lineup.
Yeah. It's been... God, what, year and a half almost now? After doing some solo work on my previous Ghost of the Ballerina record, I, you know, was feeling the itch to do the band thing again after playing several acoustic shows. And so called up Chris and was like, let's, you know, he's the former Sturgeon Mill drummer from back 99 till 2002. And so we thought it'd be fun to piece this together. And then Charles and I worked together on... the Ghost of the Ballerina record, and finding that we had many similar tastes in music, and the fact that, you know, we worked really well together, it just seemed like a good fit. And then we found Steve along the way, and he actually was a guitarist turned bass player, and found out that he's really good at playing bass, and started hitting the practice room, and the songs, you know, just started coming together, and here we are.
Cool. Well, let's listen in a little bit. This one is called Fascination.
Okay.
So one of the things you guys may be known for is driving a big white hearse to your shows. Chris, I believe that's your sweet ride.
Yes.
How did you come into that exactly?
My boss was trying to get rid of the car at the time. He was going to use it to promote his restaurant, and he didn't like the feedback that he got from other people that were telling him, hey, it's probably not a good thing to, you know, push your restaurant as like for delivery, you know, driving food around in a hearse. So he knew I was in a band and with Lonnie, and he was like, you want to buy it? And I was like, sure, what are we talking? And he told me this great price, and I was just like, I'll take it. So, you know, we've been driving around everywhere since then.
Is that the inspiration for the band name?
Well, originally it was going to be, what was the other name we had that we were going to start out with, Chuck?
It was the Lawn Furniture Show.
The Lawn Furniture Show, yeah. Lonnie Fisher and the Lawn Furniture Show. And then I don't know, I just didn't have the right kind of
feel to it.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm totally feeling it.
But yeah, the hearse definitely was a catalyst. It's like, well, if you're gonna be a band driving a hearse, you know, it needs to be, you know, the lawn furniture show might not quite work with the hearse. Mm. You know?
Yeah, you do like upholstery, like a garden sort of. Right.
It would have to be like plaid or something.
You know? Plaid.
Yeah, a plaid hearse. Hmm. But
it's red velvet.
So is this the first one that's been called Lonnie Fisher and the Funeral?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We've gotten a good response to that name. A lot of people find it pretty intriguing. And the hearse itself, when we play shows, it definitely draws a lot of attention. People
wanted to ride to the Journal World this morning. And parked in front
of it. Halloween, so you know, a lot of people are probably just thinking, oh, it's a Halloween prop today. So it's not getting its probably usual, you know, due.
Probably not, yeah.
I get different responses when I drive. The older people will kind of laugh a little bit when they see it. But then there's people like in our 20s, 30s are like, hey, that's a great car. You know, we really love your car. And every time we drive up to a show, it just attracts so much attention. So it's kind of a nice little...
You ever hang out with the Tongi kids on Mass Street on, like, you know, Friday night?
No, I think I'm past that a little bit. But, yeah, but we enjoy the car. We enjoy the car.
Yeah, people many times, you know, would like, you know, to ride in it. Mm-hmm. And one girl on one occasion actually came up to us after the show and actually asked us if there was a dead person in the back. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I lied and said there was. And she was gullible enough to actually believe me.
But, well, we didn't have any time. We had to get to the show. Yeah. You know, it happens. So were there any dead people present at Black Lodge Studios while you were recording this record?
I'm thinking that there probably were. You know, if you listen to the album, you can kind of hear the spirits floating around.
It was a mortuary? No, it was a...
It used to be an old hotel originally, but then it turned it into a crematory.
Crematory.
Isn't that right?
I think it just used to be a mortuary. The county morgue, I'm sorry, at one time, and then also a bank.
I couldn't tell you the difference between a morgue and a mortuary if my life depended on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to hang out in those places. For a
That's why we bring in experts like you guys.
I'd imagine mortuary is where they actually make you look fashionable.
Mm. Okay.
Your exit.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think we're off topic. Let's bring it back to the record a little bit. This song is called Broken Sparrow. It's probably going to be wrapping up pretty soon, but maybe give us a quick introduction.
Broken Sparrow, yes. The album is, you know, as the title indicates, a story, a very personal story that of someone that I met and named Ramona. And
you didn't even change the name, huh?
No. And... Well, this particular song is a reflection of her childhood and wishing she was still a little girl and unfortunate memories of being raped by her father. So that'll give you a little something to think about.
So where did the story come from, Lonnie?
Well, the story came from, actually when I met Ramona, somebody that entered my life in like 1993. She was a girl that I was very fascinated and became friends with, but she had a very, very troubled past, and she was somebody that was definitely on the edge of suicide and ending her life. Yes. And I found that our friendship... was very beneficial for both of us because I'm kind of a caretaker kind of person. And she, you know, after going through several of her issues of being raped as a child and failed relationships, therefore, because of it, and lots of social anxieties and things that don't know, I felt, I don't know, there was something that clicked between us, and then also she was using prostitution as her forms of making a living, and I was just, I don't know, I guess I was just trying to be a positive influence on her life and to try to, you know, it's like trying to help an old friend, you know, get their life straight and get back on track. So a lot of these songs on this record are just taken from experiences of things that we talked about or things that we did together. That's kind of pretty much the overall view of the. If you listen to the lyrics of the songs, it does a much better job of describing what those situations were.
Wow. And it's like you said, it's experience that started in 1993, meeting this person.
Right.
And well, now it's 2008.
Uh-huh.
15 years have passed.
Yep.
And it's like, you know.
And I just now decided to write about it.
Right. That's what I was wondering. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you meet as you get older. You meet a lot of people in life, and some people, you know, really, their influence sticks with you, and really, you know, even affects the person you become. I decided to write about it because she's no longer alive, and so, you know, it has a very tragic ending. But it's just, I don't know, kind of a, out of respect for her life, I thought that it was good to write these songs. And I just personally believe that songs that come from something that deep within usually has a lot of feeling and emotion and is something that a lot of other people actually could relate to.
Cool. Well, let's listen to a little bit more, and then we'll come back and chat.
All right.
I'm falling in love again. It's burning real life. And then I'm
This song is called Chasing a Ghost, and up next is the title track, Ramona. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Okay, yeah, Ramona is definitely the catalyst for the whole record. And, well, the song is really reflective. It's kind of the hindsight, the reminder in the record of, you know, with Ramona, what, you know, what could have been done differently to change the course of destiny. It's kind of just my take on saying, wow, you know, I did everything I could. I tried to, you know, try to be the friend that she needed, but in the end, it still wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was it challenging for you to write a record this, you know, personal? And
yes. It's like one of those things you almost don't know what you're getting yourself into sometimes. The writing process of it, you know, there would be times I'd get a little choked up, you know. Even performing them live, it's hard at times to get through the song, even, so to speak, without... So I try to, like, you know, look at it from more of a joyous standpoint, like it's a celebration of life versus, you know, all the pain and sorrows and things that happen. But, yeah, it's, you know, writing the songs was hard, and, you know, I wanted to do the story justice and do it with complete honesty. But that's the beauty of music. It's supposed to be emotional, and it's supposed to have something behind it and not be so generic.
Did you take that approach with your last record? And, I mean, do you think you can, you know, keep that up on another release? Or
oh, yeah. I got a lot of that inside of me, you know. I think it's fuel to the fire, you know. I just keep... Mm-hmm. That's just the way I write. And
so have, you know, friends of Ramona or family, you know, heard this record? Had any response
yet.
Or anything?
Not
you
yet.
Know, is
nope.
It something you think will happen? Or
It's not something I'm going to pursue.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, it'll get out there, and people that knew us together or our friendship will figure it out mm-hmm. within time. So it'll be interesting to see down the road, you know, what the response is.
Cool. Charles, you played piano on this record, and sounds like you're shredding a la The Cure a little bit. No, I don't know. You're just talking about The Cure, the new Cure record. What do you think about it?
I think it sounds a little bit like the Wish record.
A little bit like it.
Yeah.
Is that a good
I've
thing?
Only gotten to give it one listen, and that was while I was driving and shopping, so I didn't really get to do the sit down and concentrate on it.
Mm. What were you shopping for?
Towels.
Okay.
I've got a nifty addition to my merch box that I'll tell you about later, Richard.
Okay. Well,
you don't want to know.
Why don't you just tell us about it now, Charles?
Yeah. We'll save it for next time.
Okay, we'll save that for next Charles interview. Well, this song is called "Look at Me Now," and it's track 5 of 6, and it sounds like this. So way back in the 90s, speaking of which, we saw Local H last night. That was a blast from the past.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But right about the time that Bound for the Floor was hitting commercial radio, Sturgeon Mill was tearing it up in Lawrence, Kansas. And it seems like after Sturgeon Mill disbanded, you didn't even play music for a while. Is that right?
That's true. Well, you know, took a break. You know, sometimes you have to... I tend to be very... into music, so it's like being in a band takes a lot out of you, and mm-hmm. and a lot of times you ignore other aspects of your life, you know, or other things you could pursue or explore. And I had reached a point, I think, you know, I felt very satisfied, you know, Sturgeon Mill was a great band. It gave me a lot of confidence as a songwriter and as a performer. And, you know, after that, it was like, hey, let's take a break. And, you know, that's how I got into cooking and being a chef. Mm-hmm. And
you cook at Wheatfields.
I am a chef at Wheatfields. And and that's something I equally now enjoy just as much as music. So if I hadn't taken that break, you know, then I probably would not have, got into pursuing those things.
And Lawrence would have a lot less delicious bread. And
fried chicken.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all about the fried chicken.
Is that your specialty?
Yeah, that's what I'm known for, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, we go to a lot of shows, and I'm sometimes not even referred to as Lonnie now. I'm like the fried chicken guy. Are you that fried chicken guy? So, yeah.
So do people specifically ask for your fried chicken when they go to Wheatfields?
It's every Wednesday night, and I make this big batch, and it flies out the door.
That's
just
the only fried chicken you're going to get at Wheatfields is Lonnie's.
On Wednesday night?
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
This is
important information.
Reserve your chicken dinner. He's
a multi-tiered individual. He's
yeah,
talented.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, are you feeling like this? You know, record being out is kind of the end of like a cycle here. What are your plans?
Well,
or the beginning.
You never know. We're gonna continue to play out the rest of our schedule for this year, which includes Holly Go Lightly as well, cool. Which is going to be a really fun show. And 2009, we're just going to kind of take it as we come and, play this record for a while and, until I start drumming up another series of thoughts or whatever the next record's going to be. Mm-hmm. But most of the records, and even like the Sturgeon Mill record, Ripples in the Upside Down Pond and Goes to the Ballerina, they always end up being conceptual in some sort of way, so mm-hmm. it'll have to be another story.
What are some of your favorite conceptual records of all time?
Oh, my Lord. I guess the records that influenced me in terms of being conceptual were actually the early Moody Blue records.
Cool.
Yeah.
Which ones?
Oh, To Our Children's Children's Children, In Search of the Lost Chord, On the Threshold of a Dream.
I think this is the first time we've talked about the Moody Blues in this podcast studio.
Yeah. Well, and we all like The Cure.
He's got the Mellotron actually going on right now, a Mellotron mm-hmm. sound, which
yeah.
is very
I'm a big fan blues. Of the Mellotron. I must have.
Yeah. So these early Moody Blues records are worth checking out, huh?
Well, you know, it's a love-hate relationship. Some people thought they were
kind of like Steely Dan. That's
yes.
kind of how I feel about Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Love-hate.
Yeah.
I don't know. Charles is smiling. Why are you? What are you laughing at?
Oh, because I was thinking about the Moody Blues.
Well, I started thinking about Steely Dan, actually.
Well, one of the fun things actually for me is finding bands that I didn't give the time of day to, mm-hmm. and then to find the records that are seriously badass. Like somebody the other day was telling me, "Oh man, ZZ Top. You wouldn't think, but like, man, go back and listen to those first three records.
Right.
Wow, or like." Find somebody like Neil Diamond,
uh-huh.
and then suddenly you're like, wow, this guy could write some tunes.
Yeah,
Well,
Justin Hayward's singer from the Moody Blues, his song "Nights in White Satin" was really the song that just made me go, wow, I want to be a singer. I want to be a mm-hmm. songwriter. That's probably like my all-time favorite song.
And actually, cool. The only song you've ever attempted.
Yeah,
only cover you've ever attempted.
Right, actually, that's right? True, Chris. We one thing we've never really tried to do is do covers very often, but. Especially in my acoustic sets, if I'm playing coffee shop kind of bars or things like that, I will pull that song out and do it live.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we got about 3 minutes left on the record, so let's just listen to it a little bit more.
I'm going down,
kind of fun to sit here and watch you guys making faces at your music.
Well, you know, after you've heard it so many times, then you can start poking fun at yourself. You
yeah.
It's pretty serious music. You have to laugh a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the name again of the record is The Story of Ramona, and it's 6 songs. Was there any material that didn't make it to the record?
Yeah, I mean, originally it was planned out to be a 12-song release, but...
Yeah.
Budget.
Then, you know, a couple medleys later.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah. Well, it was a money thing, partially, and...
Nah, man, it's a listening experience. You got to say that.
I need to sell more fried chicken, you know.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what we're here for.
Yes.
And once we get the word out about that Wednesday nights, money will be rolling in, and we'll have a second installment in no time.
Yeah, we'll go from EP to full release on the next
double one. Disc.
Yeah, double disc.
Double disc. Yep. Yeah. Wow. Disc. Double disc. That seems like even more ridiculous. Like nowadays.
So self-indulgent. Like, most people can't really pull it off.
Yeah, Lonnie, I bet you could, man.
Well, you know the thing. One of the things that really helped this EP out, actually, was the fact that Chuck did a good job of editing it and helping format the arrangement, and it really helped that story come together and make, you know, it's kind of like a short story versus, like, I could have gave you the longer, windier version, but it really still, it says everything that I wanted to say, he did a really good job with that.
Do you sing as well, Charles?
I don't, actually. I mean, we've talked about it, but I just never get around to doing it. And Lonnie is always so prolific about filling in the vocal spots when we're in their recording stuff. It's unnecessary, really. His voice is much prettier than mine. So.
But he's got the nasty voice, which I envy sometimes.
Well, cool. Smoke more cigarettes, Fisher.
Can't do it, man.
Well, got any closing thoughts about this record? Or
Well, I'd like, you know, obviously I'd like to see everybody go out and pick it up and you know, smoke lots of cigarettes.
Did we talk about the CD release party? Did we mention that?
That's a great thing to talk about.
Yeah, we need
to
mention
Wednesday night at the Jackpot.
Yeah.
And we actually have some other great bands playing with this band called Kinch.
Kinch from Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. They're touring right now. Awesome band. We made friends with them down at the Riot Room when they played in Kansas City, and they will be down there the night before and then meet us down here. And then also we're playing with Aubrey, who we've known for a long time. And also The Granting, a newly formed Lawrence band that also features Adam Hess, former Sturgeon Mill guitarist.
Cool.
So,
what time are you guys playing?
We are going to take stage at 9. Doors open at 7. It's an early all ages show.
Oh, cool.
So the kids can come out. And then Aubrey will take stage at 8. We'll be on at 9. The Granting at 10, and then Kinch will be on at 11.
Right on.
That way we get to relax and hang out.
Yeah, come see the Kinch. Cool. A really good group.
Yeah.
Really
good group. And then there will be fried chicken at my house afterwards.
Okay.
You think I'm kidding?
He's not kidding.
I have no reason to doubt you. Well, Lonnie, Charles, and Chris, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Richard. Really appreciate it.
Look forward to hearing you guys play this record.
Awesome.